It's not like any other podcast, coming to you straight from the heartland, where investing is told like it is. It's time for Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. Hold on, because here comes the next episode of the Paranoid Banker Podcast.
Hey, Darren Garman here with this week's Paranoid Banker Podcast. I am excited to go over roadblocks. We're going to talk about roadblocks on the podcast this week. And the reason we're going to talk about these roadblocks is because what I discover a lot with people is what really gets in the way of the success that they're looking for. And everybody's got their own definition of that, of what success is, obviously. But a lot of what gets in the way of people achieving what they are looking to achieve, whether it's a goal, and it can be any kind of goal, near-term, long-term, whether it's a level of success that they feel they need to have, whether that's financially, personally, maybe in some areas of life, all areas of life. You know, we could go around and round all day about this. But when it comes down to the frustration that people feel about achieving the success that they're looking for, and by frustration I mean the frustration they feel when they're not achieving it, it comes down to really them. In most cases, it comes down to them, it comes down to you, it comes down to me, okay? And we're going to talk about roadblocks that we put in front of ourselves. And I'm going to talk about three investment roadblocks. I'm going to talk about three personal roadblocks on this podcast. I don't want to make it a 50 roadblock podcast, because really, if you think about it, we tend to, you know, sabotage ourselves most of the time, and we could come up with a long list. But so what I've really done for this podcast, guys, is I really boil it down to really three, what I would call personal roadblocks that are in your way most of the time. And if you get these out of the way, you will get to where you want to get to. You will achieve what you want to achieve. You will have that goal, that end result, whatever you're looking for, the success you're looking for, faster. And same goes with investing. Same thing. Okay. And so let's just jump into them. Let's jump in. And first of all, let's start with investments first, and then we're going to start go get into the personal stuff. All right. So investment, what's the first roadblock you got to get out of your way when it comes to investing? And that it's really kind of a combination. It's the fear of unconventional investments and Wall Street brainwashing. Okay. You've got to get the Wall Street brainwashing out of your way, that roadblock out of the way. And that also ties into fear of unconventional investments. Okay. And so what most of us are taught or told at a young age is save your money, right? And by the way, that's fine. I think people should save their money. So I'm not criticizing that at all. But as we get older, then it basically becomes save it. And then you do what with it? That's right. You send it off to Wall Street typically. And by that, I mean mutual funds, stocks, bonds, money market funds, basically the word funds. And most funds are domiciled. Wall Street is where they're domiciled or where they began. And what becomes, let's put money in a savings account. Let's put money in a high interest CD, okay? Let's then put money in a mutual fund where automatically every month out of an account, there's investment monies taking out of your checking, savings, whatever, and it goes to some Wall Street company and it's invested probably in a mutual fund or something of that nature. And it's the fear of unconventional investments that stops people from really hitting the investment home runs that they're looking for. Because in their mind, they're thinking they're going to get to where they want to get to by the long, slow slog through it, process of sending your money to Wall Street each and every month, every year, every quarter, whatever it is. Now, first of all, I mean, this is better than doing nothing, right? This is better than spending your money on depreciating assets and, you know, a whole list of things, right? So it's better than that, obviously. But if you really want to get to where you want to get to from an investment standpoint and really hit those home runs, you got to be thinking unconventional investments, because always remember this. You get unconventional results from unconventional investments, all right? And so I'm not necessarily talking about going out. I had a guy call me the other day, wanted to know if I had an interest in buying a mine where they mine out minerals and gold and all this. You know, you want to know if I'd be interested in a mine, financing a mine. No, I'm not interested in a mine. That's definitely unconventional. There's no question about it. How many times have you been pitched or someone called you about, hey, let's buy a gold mine today? A real gold mine. Okay, or let's buy a business that sells drywall. Or let's sell plaster. Or, I mean, those are definitely unconventional. So I'm not necessarily saying you go way off the radar here. But there are unconventional investments that make a hell of a lot of sense. I'll just mention a couple. They're real estate related, but there are a couple of really, really good investments. One is tax lien certificates. Okay, so you can go, as a matter of fact, Iowa, right now, Iowa has their tax sale here, I think, this weekend, as a matter of fact, or maybe next week. So you could go to one of Iowa's 99 counties this week. Sit down and buy yourself tax lien certificates that produce 2% a month. A month. Okay? A month. Guaranteed. A month. So your 24% annual return. And oh, by the way, the worst case scenario is you get the property, which is going to return, in most cases, a hell of a lot more than 24%. Well, you can't get that by sending that money off to Wall Street. Sure, you might have a year here or there that you might get that point, but this is every year. Every year you get this. Yet, not a lot of people really want to do that because they don't really know much about it. It sounds unconventional. I'll just let them suck money out of my bank account. I'll just send it off to, you know, my Schwab account. That's what I'll do. That sounds like maybe a better idea. Again, better than doing nothing, but I don't know about you. I'd rather look at that 24%. So that's one example. Another, of course, is investing in real estate like apartments, shopping centers, even development land. So if you think about the really rich real estate guys that you've heard of, Trump, Zelle, there are others out there. These guys are unconventionally investing in assets. Hotels, big buildings, groups of properties. That's definitely unconventional. And, you know, for most of us, we can't go out and write a $4 billion check and buy this stuff. However, there are ways that all of us can get involved in similar kind of investments that are being run, managed, oversights being done by somebody that has that kind of experience and success, really. But a lot of us don't do that. Why? Because we're kind of afraid of it. We're not really, you know, it's not easy to do. We've got to learn a little bit. We've got to take a little bit more risk in terms of reaching those investment goals by doing that. Okay, big roadblock, guys. That's a big roadblock for you. So you need to be thinking about getting rid of that roadblock in your way that's preventing you from getting involved in unconventional investments and having that Wall Street brainwashing where that's where your money goes. Okay, if you want to be super successful. Now, if you want to be average, then keep doing it. Fine. I mean, you know, there's no problem there, of course. But if you don't want to be average, you need to think about that. Okay, so that's number one. Number two. This is a biggie, by the way, and this is one that you really wouldn't think would be a biggie until you really think about what I'm going to tell you. And it's fear of what others will think, fear of criticism in terms of what you're investing in. Okay. How many of us have looked for advice from people that we think enough of to ask for advice, only to be criticized by what we're thinking of in terms of what investment we're thinking of getting involved in? In a lot of cases, it's people close to us. A lot of cases, it's relatives, friends, people that know us well. A lot of times. And so when we get the, well, I don't know if that's a good idea, what are you thinking? Or that's stupid. Or why would you ever want to do that? And the thing about that is that criticism and that opinion of what others think, a lot of times they're doing that thinking they're doing you a favor and saving you from something, you know, saving you from a mistake, right? Saving you from a mistake. And I can't tell you how many people have tried to save me from making a mistake. And, you know, had no problem in giving me their opinion about that, supposedly, you know, saving me from that. And I give you like an example that all that you'll be able to relate to. I've got tons of investing and real estate examples, but let me give you one that a lot of us can relate to or know about, and that's about buying a house. Okay, buying your own house. So I remember when Gina and I were out looking to buy our first home. Credit's great. We've got plenty of down payment, good job. So everything's going great. So we're out looking to buy our first house. I mean, we're looking at spending. So this would have been in the late, this is like 1990s, early 90s. So that was a long time ago. So we're looking at spending, it's like $60,000, $65,000 on a house, right? Imagine that today. Oh my God. But anyway, that's what we're looking at buying, like a $65,000 house. Okay. Not a lot of money. I mean, today you can get it's kind of hard to get a decent vehicle for $65,000. But anyway, this was 25 years ago or so. So we did what a lot of people in our position, being young, would do. Who do you think we ask for advice from? That's right, the parents. Okay, the parents. And so we asked Gina's parents to come and look at a couple of houses that we were thinking of buying. Well, the whole damn time they're here, they're telling us, oh, you probably don't want to buy a house. Big commitment, big financial risk, probably need to save more money. I mean, all we heard was all the reasons why we shouldn't be doing this from them. Then, after hearing that, we would go out and look at some houses. And, of course, do you think that they would find a house or see a house that they thought would be good for us to own, that didn't have any issues or any problems? Do you think they found that out there? No. Every damn house we looked at was like, you know, going to fall down tomorrow. Don't light a match close to it. It'll just burst into flame. I mean, every house we looked at, there was just huge problems when there really weren't. And so talk about a dumb idea. I mean, we never should have done that. But at the time, you don't know what you don't know. And so that's an example. And that's not even an unconventional amendment. That's just a house. But we let that affect us for a while. We're like, well, maybe we should kind of back off and maybe not. And we're thinking maybe that might. But then, you know, we came to our senses. We bought a house. And of course, everything worked out just fine. Right? So, but we were afraid to do that, to take that step until we got the blessing from people. We got feedback from people. We were concerned about what other people would think, okay, and being criticized by doing it. And this goes with investing, okay, from, like I said, people close to us and people maybe not close to us. Oh, you're invested in that, or you own that? What are you doing in that? And all of a sudden now, we've got to explain ourselves, and none of us really like to do that, do we? Well, it's a roadblock. And so bottom line is, you should invest in any damn thing you want. You know, of course, listening to roadblock number one as like part of that, I think. But you should invest in anything you want and not care what anybody thinks, because it's you. It's your time. It's your money. It's your goals. It's what you want to do. Nobody has anything to do with that but you. And if it's you and a partner, husband, wife, kids, whatever, fine. But you also all need to be on the same page as far as that's concerned. Okay, because I'll get people in my office all the time where, this is not a sexist comment. I'm not being sexist in any way when I say it. I'm just being accurate. Here's what happens. Husband and wife come into my office. Husband's on the seat of his chair wanting to talk about buying apartments, investing in apartments. He's like, can't wait to get involved in a great project, excited. His blood pressure's up. He's ready to go. Sitting next to him, his wife is sitting back in her chair, glaring through me. Laser beams are going through my head, and arms crossed, legs crossed, and just hating every second she has to be looking at me and listening to her husband. Happens all the time. Well, they're not on the same page, and nothing's ever going to work out. So the minute I have this issue in my office, I mean, the conversation is less than 5 minutes. Goodbye, because I already know. If they're not on the same page, nothing's going to happen. And so you got to get on the same page with those close to you when it comes to what others will think and what kind of investing you're going to do. If not, it's going to be years of struggle, frustration, pain. So you guys, you need to have that conversation now with anyone that you're close to. Okay. So, The first roadblock we talked about was fear of unconventional investments, and we talked about that Wall Street brainwashing. Let's get rid of that roadblock first of all, right? The second one was fear of what others will think, and like we talked about, a lot of those others, what they think and what they criticize us for in terms of what we decide to or what we're thinking about or what we want to invest in, they really have good intentions. We know that, but also, that's like the worst kind of intent. That's like the worst. Don't listen to them. Do what you want to do, making sure you and those close to you are all on the same page. So let's go to number three, biggest investment roadblock. Again, this is preached to us by everybody. You turn on any financial network on TV, on a website, radio show, they will tell you all day long about the D word. What is the D word? The D word is diversification. That's what the D word is. Oh, you should diversify. You should be invested in a whole bunch of stuff, just in case. And that's why mutual funds are so popular, right? Because, you know, you make one investment and you own, I don't know, a couple hundred stock or bonds or, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. And so, you know, theoretically, it's if some do good, some do bad, and you know, you're going to still come out okay. Yeah, diversification is kind of for sissies, really, is what it is. Diversification is for those thinking average. Again, there's nothing wrong with average, nothing at all. That's what you want. You're okay with that. Good for you. I mean, that's fine. But if you're an investor wanting exceptional, above average, I mean, way above average, you can't diversify. You got to be in like one investment. It gets back to the old Andrew Carnegie, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, Andrew Carnegie, billionaire, one of the richest men ever in the history of the United States, by the way. I mean, back then he was worth, I don't know how many hundreds of billions of dollars, but even in today's standards, it'd be billions. You make one investment and you watch that one investment. And of course, the conventional wisdom is, oh, geez, if that one thing goes down, has a problem, if there's issues, you're going to have trouble. Well, what I'm going to tell you is if you really, really want your investments to pay off big, big, big time, they got to be in one investment. Okay. Name any wealthy, successful, rich investor that's diversified in a whole bunch of stuff. Think of people that own companies, investors that own companies. Okay. Think of investors. Think of the Forbes 400 list, for example. Are they all diversified? No, they're not. They have one business that may have different assets and diversification in those businesses. You know, so, you know, Elon Musk is not only building Teslas, he's got, you know, solar business, and he's trying to go to the moon and space flight and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, sure. But there's like one investment there. Okay. And if you want to reach your investment goals, you need to be thinking not diversification. Okay. What one, two, or three investments am I going to lock in on? I'm going to go for it. Okay. And again, that's unconventional. A lot of people don't think that way. But if you want above average returns and above average progress with your investing, that's the way you got to think. So that's the investment stuff. So let's talk about personal stuff now. Okay. The three bigger roadblocks that I see when it comes to personal achievement, personal success. Let's hit the first one. Okay, the first one is blaming others and passing on responsibility that is really yours to own and yours to have. Okay? Because of what you haven't achieved yet, because of you missing out on, you name it, job opportunity, goal not achieved, career thing not happening for you yet, whatever you might have some angst about regarding yourself personally, we tend to, including me, we tend to look outside ourselves and place blame on something outside ourselves, don't we? Right? Well, it's not my fault. It's the time of year. It's not my fault. It's that it's because the economy sucked in. It's not my fault. It's because my partner did this. It's not my fault. It's because fill in the blank. Okay. I'm not there because I had a crazy work schedule the last 2 years. I'm not there because I didn't get promoted. I mean, we could just fill in the blank all day long. And every time we fill in the blank, it is something about something outside of ourselves. We're blaming and we're passing on responsibility to other people, other situations outside of ourselves. Here's like the big secret. You want to remove a big freaking roadblock out of your way? Start taking responsibility for every damn thing that happens to you, even if it doesn't even look like you should be responsible for it. All right, so I'm going to give you an example. So I'm driving home last week. I'm flying down the interstate. Yeah, I'm speeding, by the way. I'm flying down the interstate, and I'm not speeding big time. I mean, speed limit's like 70. I'm doing like 80, so I'm not going like 110 or 120. I'm doing 80 and a 70, okay? It's at night. I got a good car, bright lights, okay? I'm flying down the road. Within half a second, a deer runs in the road. I nail the deer doing 80 miles an hour. Swerve over, airbags go off. I'm on the side of the road. I mean, I finally kind of come to my senses. It was, you know, stunned by the airbags going off. I get out, assess the damage. So long story short, car's not totaled, but it's going to need a lot of work. We're going to be out of commission without a car for a couple of weeks. While they do the work, I've got deductibles to pay. It's hassles working with insurance people. I mean, it's going fine, but I mean, it's time, effort, and energy. And now we're Gina doesn't have her vehicle because that's what I was driving, and we've got to get another car. And she, you know, so there's all this shit going on regarding this. Okay, so whose fault is this? I could say it's the deer's fault, couldn't I? Hey, I was just driving down the road. I was in the right lane. Yeah, I was speeding, but I didn't make the deer jump out in front of me, so it's the deer's fault. Well, bullshit, it's my fault, right? Definitely my fault. I mean, I chose the time to leave. I chose to speed. I chose everything. So, you know, the funny thing is, if I would have left 5 minutes later, 5 minutes earlier, if I would have slowed down 5 miles an hour, I probably wouldn't have hit this deer. But I hit it. It's my fault. And so I talk to people, oh, yeah, those deer, you got to watch out for those deer. Sorry that happened. And so everybody, you know, it's nice to hear they think it's the deer's fault. No, it's my fault. It's mine. And too many of us, with everything, pass and blame responsibility so we don't have to take it on. And almost everything that happens in your life, almost everything, even though you may not think it is your responsibility and your fault, guess what? It is. So the sooner you realize this, and the sooner you get this roadblock out of your way, the more progress you will make, the faster progress you will make, because you know now you know what you know. You can accept it. You can own it. You can move on. Okay? There's no excuses anymore. No excuses anymore. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, and you're going to think this is a little bit goofy, but I find this to be a problem with a lot of people. I used to have this problem big time. And it's sleeping in. Okay, sleeping in. So I find that a lot of people that aren't achieving their targets personally or financially are a lot of times are sleeper inners. So instead of being up and at it on a Saturday morning, working on getting to where they need to get to, they're sleeping until 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. Okay. They're going to bed late at night, getting up late in the morning. These are the same folks that during the week, instead of getting up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, working for an hour on whatever it is that they think is important to them, they're sleeping in till 6:30, 7 o'clock, getting up and barely making it out the door to be to where they need to be on time, right? So if you think about it, so I work every morning. Every morning, Saturday, Sunday included. I'm not sleeping in. So I will get, over most people, a minimum of 2 hours a day in productivity over them. Every day, 7 days a week. So, I mean, you just do the math. 2 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's 14 hours a week times 4 weeks a year. That's what? 56 hours a month. Okay? So I get 56 hours more a month in productivity, and that's like being conservative, than probably most anybody else, right? So at the end of the day, I'm going to be a hell of a lot closer to the things that I want to achieve because I'm putting 60 hours a month in more than they are. And multiply that by 12, okay? 700 plus hours. You know, you divide that by 24 hours, you know, all of a sudden, that's a month, basically, or more than a month. So it's kind of an odd roadblock, I know. I know it kind of is. I mean, it's one you probably weren't even expecting. Sleeping in, come on, what are you talking about? But think about your habits right now. Are you, like, sleeping in Saturday mornings, Sunday mornings? Are you getting up later than you need to during the week? I mean, and look, I'm not saying you need to have 4 hours of sleep here. Okay, so if that's the case, you need to change the time you go to bed. So stop going to bed at 11, 11:30 at night. Stop staying up watching TV. Get your ass in bed at 9, 9:30 at night, whatever it is. Get up at 4, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. Be productive for an hour, hour and a half, okay? And you'll find you're going to get to where you want to get to in terms of what you want to achieve a hell of a lot faster, mainly because you're just putting more time in, right? So I'm putting a hell of a lot more time in than most people. Okay, which is why I tend to get what I get and they tend to get what they get. It's not rocket science. And yeah, but Darren, I need 7 hours of sleep, 8 hours of sleep. Look, no, you don't, by the way. You don't need 8 hours. Of course, health-wise, we'll have this argument all day long. Doctors, you need 7, 8 hours of sleep. Okay. And again, I'm not saying you live on 3, 4 hours of sleep. I don't. But, I mean, rarely am I sleeping 7, 8 hours a day. But even if that is the case, get your ass to bed early. Don't stay up and watch TV, because that's what most people do. So if you're telling me that you stay up and watch TV at night, you're up at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning or later, you're barely getting out of bed to get to where you need to get to and get there on time, and you're sleeping in on Saturdays and Sundays, well, I mean, that pretty much says a lot, doesn't it? It has to do with one thing, freaking sleep. So stop sleeping in. All right, so that's number two roadblock. Number three, this is one I hate, by the way. I can't stand this one. I hate it. But it's what I'm going to tell you is true. And I hate it. I have a hard time with this one. And if you want to get a big roadblock out of your way, value results over effort. Okay? Value results over effort. And it took me a long time to figure this one out. Because For years, I was like, oh, man, I gave so much effort, and I'd be proud of the effort I gave. I mean, I did everything I thought I could do, and then some. You know, the old 110%, all of that. And, God, even though if I didn't achieve what I wanted, get to where I wanted to get to, have the success I was looking for, man, I really put forth a good effort. And a lot of us in society really value effort, and we should, okay, because you can't get anywhere without it. I mean, if you want to get somewhere other than being average, you got to have a lot of effort. Well, at the end of the day, what really counts isn't effort, it's results, isn't it? So, you know, really good analogy is sports. So I had a meeting with my management staff yesterday. And we're talking about occupancy goals, and we're going through, and we came up that they've been working hard, you know, let's just say long hours. They've been putting forth more effort than, you know, more than average effort and all these kinds of things. And so I'm hearing this in the meeting, how much they've been working and more than average and et cetera, et cetera. But I look at our occupancy, and we're not even where we need to be. We're not where we need to be with our occupancy with our apartments. So, I mean, I shut it down right then. I said, none of this matters. None of it matters because we're not hitting our targets. The results are what matters. Not patting ourselves on the back for how much work we've done, because none of it does any good if we don't hit our targets. Sports is a good place to look at this, because so you think about the New England Patriots for a second. So I told my staff this yesterday. So think about the New England Patriots. Now, whether you like the team or hate them, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter for this. They were in the Super Bowl last year. They lost. Do you think they're patting themselves on the back for a great effort? No. They're fucking pissed. Okay? They could care. They want to win another Super Bowl. So all the effort, all the work they put in, and you got to admit, you got to put forth one hell of an effort for months and years in many cases just to get to the Super Bowl, right? But do you think they care about that? No. They care about winning the damn thing. Do you think LeBron James, so as I'm recording this podcast, the Cavaliers are in the NBA Finals, okay? Do you think LeBron James cares about how much effort he's put in over the last season to get to the finals? No, what's one thing he cares about? Winning the damn finals, okay? And by the way, like I said, I hate this. I do, because it's like, wait a minute. Shouldn't I get like some payoff for this? Shouldn't there be something? And there is, but it's so far below getting where you want to get to. You know, so it's like getting the bronze medal in the Olympics, okay? No one remembers the bronze medalist, right? Even the silver medalist. Okay, it's like getting second place in something. It's just, yeah, you got, but, you know, it's just not there. It's not. And I hate it. I do. But it's true. You want to get a roadblock out of your way, man? Start valuing results. Okay. So, I've gone over six items on this podcast, what I would call three investment roadblocks and three personal roadblocks. And hopefully you've gotten something out of these roadblocks, because I guarantee that if you work on at least some of these, and look, really make an effort, really commit to it, you're going to get to where you want to get to faster. And so what it really comes down to is, how badly do you want the success that you say or think you want? And based on that, we'll then determine how you start to work on some of these things. And of course, there are probably more, and there are other things we could cover, and I don't want to make this a four-hour podcast about it, but what are you going to do with this information? What are you going to do? What kind of commitment are you going to make with this information? By the way, keep me posted. I'd love to hear from you and would love to know your results in any of the areas that we discussed this week on the podcast. All right, so have a great rest of your week, weekend, whenever you are listening. Whether you're on the elliptical, you're doing laundry, you're driving in your car, you're fishing, hell, I don't care. Have a great rest of your day. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again soon. Take care. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. For investment questions, comments, or to get in touch with Darren, go to www.garmanblog.com. Thanks for joining Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. For investment questions, comments, or to get in touch with Darren, go to www.garmanblog.com.